And, you know, and I will tell you a kind of a funny story, but my wife, we've been married 50 years now, and every time we come up to constitutional amendments, she'll say to me, which ones are we voting for? And I say, Jan, we wouldn't have passed any out of the Senate unless I was supportive of them.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of Y'allitics. That was, the voice there was Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick.
Got him on the road.
We got him on the road, and that's why you didn't see a picture of him in video in his studio or at the state capitol.
He's that's hilarious, though, what he
on
said.
On vacation. Can you believe his wife asked him? My wife asked me that.
Which ones do we support here? And he's like, I'm in charge of the Senate in Texas, so anything that's on there, I push through, so kind of all of them.
We support every single one of them, and that's what we're going to talk about in this episode. One of the propositions for early voting, which begins Monday.
Yeah.
2 weeks early voting before the November 4th election.
And I have some trivia for you.
Oh, I've got stuff for you too, but go ahead.
Oh, boy.
Lead us off.
So, you know, we're talking about Proposition 14 specifically in this episode, and this is about funding this entirely new entity here in Texas and putting a lot of money into it too, specifically for Alzheimer's and dementia research here in Texas. Texas really wants to jump into this in a huge way. And so, you know, of course, one of the big risk factors for Alzheimer's and dementia is simply age. And Texas has a population, that older population, that is quickly getting older too. So I want to ask you, by 2050, how much will our over 65 population increase here?
How much will it increase or what will it be?
How much will it increase between now and 2050, the over 65 population?
I think Texas is a younger state.
It is, but how much is that older population going to increase? How many people are going to turn 65 or older?
88%
between now and 2050. This is according to Texas.
Wait, that's over 65.
Over 65.
That'll be you and I too in that group. So.
Maybe. And look at this right here. Look at this, if we last.
if we last.
The Texas Tribune did this earlier this year, and for those of you who are watching us, you can see it. I'll describe it to the rest of you. They say that older adults outnumber kids in nearly a third of Texas counties already. That stunned me. Everything you see here in blue, it's mainly a lot of rural areas, especially to the west of I-35, but it's just staggering how many counties there. Where people 65 and older already outnumber children.
Yeah, that's fascinating considering that you and I are going to be in that group by 2050.
Where are we going to be on this map?
Well, that's a big question.
Oh, wait, Italy's not on here.
Are we? It's only Texas. So I have some viewer mail, as Letterman used to say.
Okay.
Listener mail, this is what this
that's
is.
That's scary.
So some feedback.
That it came to you.
No, I think it went to all of us. Oh. No, this did come to me.
I don't check my emails much, I guess.
He said, I usually try to mute when the other Jason's listening. No, he didn't say that. But
good luck. You're listening to like a tenth of the podcast in that case.
Exactly. Maybe, right? maybe a breath here or there. So this is James Enright, longtime listener. He sent us an email the other day and said he was listening to Y'allitics for 5 years. Hmm. Even when he didn't live in Texas.
Interesting.
He
you know, we've heard that from other people, that's how they sort of, they considered this their primer when they moved here or before they were going to move here to figure out, like, what are the issues in Texas? What's going on? And they appreciate the conversations.
And James was very kind with that. He also, you know, is keeping us in line, adding guardrails to
it
because we do need that. And we should hire James to be the managing editor of the podcast since it's an opening we should probably go ahead and try to fill
doesn't
right now.
Doesn't pay anything, though.
It doesn't, unfortunately. We'll buy you a beer, though. James, he said, hey, I enjoy the podcast. Keep doing what you're doing. But you know, it'd be helpful for some of us who might not know these issues. Dig into the numbers a tad more. Tell us what some of this stuff means. Some, you know, back of the envelope type math would be fantastic.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Who's our numbers guy?
I'm supposed to be the numbers guy, so we're in big trouble.
James, we do need you, my friend.
I'm going to work on my math. That's why I've got my computer here.
But before we get into the episode here, too, I want to mention I was at the State Fair of Texas the other day, and a couple of guys came up and said, hey, we listen to you all the time. And it's fascinating that, you know, you and I have been on TV in Dallas for a long time, and people listen to the podcast.
And they remember the name.
And they remember the name.
It has a catchy name. Now, but today, for the first time, I heard a different version of that name that I had never heard before. What is it?
A former employee of ours here who was at the beginning of the podcast with us. Didn't call it Yolitics. She would call it Yolistics.
Yolistics. I love that.
And if she is listening today.
Hello, Bernadine.
She knows exactly about this. But I was at the State Fair of Texas. These two great guys said, listen, we're longtime listeners of Yolitics. And they wanted to know if your hair was real. And I said, I think it is.
It's real. Pull it. They were asking about yours or mine?
No, about yours.
It's all real. Look at that. I'm pulling it.
Yeah.
It was just cut the other day.
What's the number three on the
sides?
It's
all real. And no product in it today either.
Do you ever wear product in your hair?
Every now and then.
It's always just kind of messy. That's a look you
When have. I do, it's clay. That's the trick.
Clay?
Clay.
That's a product
natural,
you can buy?
It's natural clay. You spread it on your hands and you put it on. I'm going to get as a sponsor for this podcast, Jason.
Absolutely. All right, so you have, last episode we talked about another issue about the business taxes and how voters in Texas are going to see this on the ballot when they go vote, when they can vote starting tomorrow for early voting.
And you can get in for that early vote, or if you prefer to go on the day of, it is on November the 4th. And again, turnout is always terrible for these constitutional amendment elections. And there's huge things on this ballot, including how enormous sums of your money get spent and the priorities that we, consider important here in the state. And that's why Proposition 14 is the focus of our podcast today, because we know, just about probably everybody who's listening right now has known someone, possibly in their family, a friend, a neighbor, or a coworker who has had dementia or Alzheimer's. It affects every family. I don't know what the degrees of separation are, but I think most people have dealt with this in their lives. And so years ago, Texas created this sort of cancer moonshot, this big initiative to fund cancer research, and it has just taken off in this state, and a lot has come out of that. Now they want to do the very same thing with dementia and Alzheimer's, and they're talking about committing $3 billion out of the surplus, the state surplus, right away, and immediately after that, these grants would start to go out. And so we got someone pretty high up on the line with us for this.
Yeah, we did. And when you mentioned this idea, I'm like, you know what? That sounds familiar, because I remember when we sat down with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick at the beginning of the legislative session back in January. And one of the things he talked about, he rattled off his 10, 15, 20 different political priorities, things you've heard of, school vouchers, X, Y, Z. But in the priority list was DPRIT, this dementia initiative here. And he said that, and at the time, it didn't really make headlines, but this was a priority for him. He got it passed, and I called him back once you told me about this, and I had to find him first, because he's not
Where in the
capital.
World is Dan Patrick?
Where is Dan Patrick? But he, like so many lawmakers, after all the special sessions, decided to get some R&R with his family. I caught him on vacation, I gave him a call, and I asked him about this. What was the genesis for this? Here's what he said.
Hey, Governor, are you there?
Hey, I'm here, Jason. How are you?
Governor, thanks for the time here. I remember when you and I spoke at the beginning of the year about what the legislative session was going to look like. One of the things you mentioned in all of your priorities was about dementia research, making sure that Texas lays some money down to be a leader in dementia research. At the time, it kind of struck me, well, that's unusual with all the priorities you have. But what was the genesis of that?
Well, a lot of people ask me if I have a personal experience with it, my family, which I do not, and I hope I never have. But I have friends who have experienced it, and I think we're all just more aware of it. Bruce Willis became a famous case, and so people are a little bit aware of it. But the people who have dementia, which Alzheimer's is the most known disease under that umbrella, Jason, it doesn't impact just them. And we estimate in Texas we now have 500,000 cases of dementia. Now, obviously it's more than that, because a lot of people don't even know they have it for a long time. It's just, Uncle Joe's forgetful or Mom's forgetful, until it becomes a full-blown issue. But what happens, Jason, is once you have dementia, your entire family is impacted by it, because you can't leave a person by themselves. So if there are 500,000, and I know the number would be greater than that, but if there are 500,000 cases, that means there are millions of people, and many of them, the spouse of that person, or the their kids who may now be in their 40s or 50s who are now having to take care of mom or dad or whomever it may be, or grandmom. And so I just see it exploding. And we passed CPRIT, which was the Cancer Prevention and Research Institute, over 10 years ago. We renewed it. And that was the model I thought about. We put $3 billion over 10 years, rather, $300 million a year. And the reason we did it that way, Jason, for 10 years, is you to get a grant, you have to be a researcher in Texas. You have to move your research lab here, or you have to begin it here. And doctors aren't going to come to Texas. If we're going to get the best and the brightest in the world and in the country for sure to come to Texas, they're not going to do it for $300 million for 1 2-year session, thinking, well, maybe the legislature will cut the funding the next time. But when you make a 10-year commitment to it, they will invest their time. And so in cancer research, it's worked really well. And basically, we just called it DPRIT, Dementia Prevention and Research. And it's modeled exactly the same, and it will work the same way. And I want to bring the very, very best in the country and the world to Texas to research this, because it's such a tragic, tragic disease.
When early voting begins Monday, when Texans go to the polls, this is also indicative of the wide bipartisan support. It wasn't just Dan Patrick, you introduced this, but this was passed by more than 2/3 of both chambers in the Texas legislature.
Yeah, so to get on the ballot, to be a constitutional amendment, to amend our constitution is what people will be doing when they vote on these 17 propositions. It takes 2/3. That means I have to have all the Republicans and a handful of Democrats. 2/3 of the Senate is 21 out of 31. I have 20 Republicans. So and we had more than just a few Democrats on the bill, and the House had to do the same. And, you know, and I will tell you a kind of a funny story, but my wife, we've been married 50 years now, and every time we come up to constitutional amendments, she'll say to me, which ones are we voting for? And I say, Jan, we wouldn't have passed any out of the Senate unless I was supportive of them. And she'll say, yeah, but which one? I said, no. And I actually tell that story in speeches because it's kind of true. Actually, it was true 1 year. She now knows, well, what about that one? But we've put a lot of time and a lot of research into these, both chambers. I really appreciate you having me on, and the dementia is so important. We can afford to do great things in Texas and still cut property taxes and do all the things we need to do and fund our schools and pass school choice. And, you know, we're just so blessed, Jason, to have the resources we have in Texas and the great people of Texas that work so hard to build our economy and the businesses that come here and create jobs. We're so blessed. And those who are given much, much is expected from them, whether it's an individual or whether it's a state.
Well, clearly there, I mean, and he's right, you know, there is a lot of money to be spent here. And this is one of those things that, you know, unlike some of the other, you know, initiatives maybe that we've seen in Texas over the years, this one doesn't distinguish between party lines. I mean, this has, I would think, probably broad bipartisan support again, because, you know, Alzheimer's and dementia does not discriminate.
That's how it got on the ballot for everyone to vote on.
So you can tell, you know, that he's, you know, he makes sense there when he says, you know, there's money to be spent and it's, you know, it's worthwhile project. B, that it is something that is important to him. I mean, enough so to where he's taking your call while he's out in the middle of some great place trying to enjoy life.
It's got to be important if I call. There's no other reason I would call.
So we also got on
the
line.
And unlike Wheeler, he actually answers his phone. Yeah. The Lieutenant Governor does.
Well, I keep mine on Do Not Disturb. It's improved my mental health a lot. Let's talk about the other person that we're talking to in this podcast today, because we initially saw that, hey, you know, we can speak with the head of the Alzheimer's Association in the United States, which
is a national one.
Yeah, it's huge. And they advocate, of course, for this sort of thing. And then I saw that not only is she the head of the Alzheimer's Association, she lives in Texas. She's an Austin resident. And so she's going to be going to the polls, and she's urging her fellow Texans to do the same and to vote yes on Proposition 14, of course. And so we got her on the line to speak to her about what this means for Texas, what this means for patients and their families, and what this means for the economy here as well. Her name is Dr. Joanne Pike, and here's more from her.
Dr. Pike, thanks so much for joining us to talk about something that could be really momentous for the state of Texas.
Thank you for having me.
So let's dive into this and talk about Proposition 14 here. It's going to be on the ballot in November, and it's November 4th for everybody out there who hasn't yet made a plan for this election that's coming up. And of course, we have early voting before that. Proposition 14 would create a tremendous amount of money, $3 billion that would be set aside by the state of Texas from its surplus funds, which we've seen the past several sessions. They've had these enormous surpluses. It would put some of that surplus into this account that would eventually hold $3 billion and would create the Dementia Prevention and Research Institute of Texas, or DPRIT. How big of a deal is this, Dr. Pike? We know this would be the largest of that any state had done something like this as far as an initiative goes with Alzheimer's and dementia. But how big of a deal is it?
It's truly tremendous to see a state step up and show the leadership that Texas is right now with passing the DPRIT piece of legislation earlier this year and now going to the ballot to fund it this November. We have to remember that dementia and Alzheimer's impact a significant amount of Texans. We know that there are 460,000 Texans over the age of 65 right now who are living with Alzheimer's. That means there are a significant amount of family caregivers as well. 1.1 million Texans are caring for someone with Alzheimer's also. So there is a tremendous impact, and Texas with this DPRIT opportunity is stepping up to be a leader in the research and fight against Alzheimer's.
We know that a lot of money has been allocated over the years, Dr. Pike, especially at the national level for research and for clinical trials and for services. Can you put $3 billion into perspective and how much of a difference that can make in, you know, individual lives and with the overall goal of, you know, finding a cure or you know, finding a way to prevent Alzheimer's or dementia?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, the federal government invests $3.8 billion annually in the fight for research into Alzheimer's and other dementia. Now, when you think about that from the population side, from the federal government, $3.8 billion to the U.S. population, this investment from Texas would be on par for Texans with what the federal government is doing for the U.S. in terms of dollars per capita. It's a pretty amazing investment within the research infrastructure within here in the state of Texas. The other thing to think about is the Alzheimer's Association. As an organization, we invest about $112 million annually within research. DPRIT would triple the amount the Alzheimer's Association invests immediately.
Wow, that's a stunning figure when you think about it. I'm curious how your organization found out about this. And we know that this has been, you know, talked about in the legislature for years, and we've heard rumblings. This time it finally got over the finish line in the legislature. How did you all find out about this, that it looked like it really had that critical mass that it needed this time? And what, if any way, did you all get involved to try to help it get there?
Yeah, as you mentioned, this has been, you know, working its way over the last several years through some visionary leadership of Texans that have been working with our legislature. But it got over the finish line this year with Lieutenant Governor Patrick really stepping in to provide leadership to get it over that finish line. As we knew that this was gaining momentum, certainly the Alzheimer's Association and our advocates have been hard at work to make sure that the Texas legislators knew that we were behind it and we wanted to see it passed as well.
I know that you all work very closely, obviously, with lawmakers at the national level as well. Is there any difference when you were dealing with lawmakers here in Texas, Republican and Democrat? Is there any kind of a different spirit when you're, you know, trying to push this along and get this thing through? Do you sense anything different here than what you would normally encounter in D.C.?
You know, I think one of the things to always keep in mind is that most Americans are impacted by Alzheimer's or dementia in some way, shape, or form. We often say that Alzheimer's is not a red or blue issue, it's purple, the color of our cause. And so, working with bipartisan champions, whether it's at the federal government or here in the state of Texas, it's about personal connection and also wanting to change how constituents experience a disease as well. Whether you personally are connected or whether a legislator is connected, you can make that personal connection about the disease. And certainly, that really fuels a lot of passion in Congress, but also with our grassroots advocates.
Sadly, I think all of us know, you know, someone in our own lives who has been through this or who is going through this right now. What would you say to a voter out there in Texas who, you know, has had the fortune of not feeling personally touched by Alzheimer's or dementia? What would you say to them when they're stepping into that voter kiosk on November 4th, or if they choose to early vote to get their vote on Proposition 14?
Yeah, I would say that no matter if you're personally impacted or not personally impacted, the state of Texas broadly is impacted. Our state's Medicaid program is spending $4.3 billion annually, so it is impacting all of us as residents of Texas. So as we see our own state age into the greatest risk factor for Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia, that cost to us and our Medicaid program is only going to increase. So investing in DPRIT now is investing within not just our population health outcomes, it's investing within our financial and economic outcomes as well.
Let me ask you this. You travel around the country. Is any other state doing something that's even close to the magnitude of this? Do you hear of rumblings like this in other state capitals?
We have not. I mean, this is truly unique. Texas is in a unique position with both surplus but also leadership. So I think this is, you know, truly an opportunity to make a significant investment within the research infrastructure and the economic infrastructure here in Texas to make a change against Alzheimer's and lead other states to follow their that progress.
I want to start big and kind of whittle down from there. So we've talked about these big numbers. What would this do on the ground as we go forward in the years to come if voters do sign off on this? You know, as far as drawing in the best researchers from anywhere, or improving actual care or access to care, you know, sort of becoming, in a way, an economic engine, because we saw with the cancer initiative here in Texas that was started in 2007, CPRIT, that really drew in a lot of medical and biomedical firms, and it really sort of creates its own economy too. So jobs are created. Real work is being done as far as research goes and advancement goes. And it also seemed like it opened up a lot of treatment opportunities and clinical trial opportunities for people here in Texas. Is this going to do the same thing?
You're absolutely right. That's what we anticipate. We anticipate a when there is investment, there is interest from the research community. This is going to bring more researchers to the state. It will bring more innovation, more companies who are looking to enter the dementia and Alzheimer's space to Texas. So the economic impact has the potential to be very significant, but there's also people impact. We know with CPRIT that not only did it bring all of the great professional opportunities and economic opportunities, but it made Texas a destination for cancer treatment. And so having DPRIT here gives us the opportunity to also become a destination and a center of excellence, so to speak, for better care. Today, it's far too difficult for Texans to get an early and accurate diagnosis. We know that there is opportunity to improve care throughout the state, whether you're in, you know, rural West Texas or you're in an urban area. This really gives us an opportunity to think about that healthcare system care delivery in addition to the research angle on this too.
Okay, so that's a broad look there. Let's bring it down to the personal level and talk about, I mean, again, almost 500,000 Texans living with Alzheimer's or dementia, and more than 1 million caregivers helping to support them every day. How does this change their lives in real ways? Once this thing, let's say that this initiative sails through and that money starts to go into an account and starts being dispersed, how is this going to really change lives?
Yeah, I think the first thing that individuals will notice is an opportunity to participate in more clinical trials. So as they go into their doctor, they're diagnosed, there's going to be more opportunity to have an advanced participation within a potential treatment. But the other side is the care that they will receive as a result of that. The individual attention and personalized care that will occur as part of that clinical trial research infrastructure and investment within the medical system is going to be very different than the way it is today. Unfortunately, what we often hear is that it takes far too long to get in for a diagnosis. So individuals are having to wait 6, 9, 12 months to get an accurate diagnosis. To see a neurologist and having more resources within the state can change that timeline, but it can also change the experience of an individual and their care partner.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, if you're a Texan right now and it's taking you 6 months, let's say, and again, it can be a lot worse than that. It's taking you 6 months to get that diagnosis. How crucial is that early time period there? Because it seems like some of the advancements that we've seen are those interventions that happen in the beginning.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's crucial and imperative that someone gets in early and to get an accurate diagnosis, because that is when if they do have early stage Alzheimer's, they are the at the prime for receiving one of the new FDA approved treatments that are on the market today. If you wait too long, they may pass that timeline where they could benefit from those treatments. So timing is incredibly important right now when we think about the fight against Alzheimer's.
Obviously, the national fight is the biggie. That one is the one that has, supersized budgets and has for years, even though more has been needed, it seems like, every year as well. And I want to ask you about, what's happening in DC right now. We've seen the Senate roll out some ideas for actually increasing funding going forward. We've seen the House do the same, different amounts, but both of them wanting to increase what we're putting in the fight against Alzheimer's. We have seen a blueprint from the Trump administration for the budget that would cut some funding to the National Institutes of Health. Not clear exactly, where that axe would fall. How do you feel right now, nationally speaking, about the chances as far as funding goes going forward for Alzheimer's research?
Well, we have seen over the past 10 plus years, every year we have an increase in the National Institutes on Aging budget for Alzheimer's and dementia research. I think it's because of our bipartisan champions who have been with us all along the way and understand the crucial need to increase that funding so that as we are seeing a greater aging population, we're putting our dollars that in the place that is costing us the most as a country, Alzheimer's and dementia.
But
So right now,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
no, I was just going to say that you're absolutely right. We have seen tentative budgets that show increases within that research line item. We continue to work with our bipartisan champions to get that over the finish line, and we hope to see that when the final budget comes together.
Do you have any concerns, though, that that spirit could change this time around? Just because we've seen some of these actual research programs for Alzheimer's either frozen, put on hold, ended, being fought out in courts now. Do you have any trepidation about that at this point?
I think you can never count it all up on the board or count your chickens before they hatch. I think we need to certainly put all of our resources behind ensuring that that research budget is not only sustained but continues to grow for the important work that is going on right now within Alzheimer's and dementia research.
And it seems like we saw this flurry of headlines several months ago that some programs have been put on hold or frozen or were being fought out in the courts. And then you don't really see the follow-ups to some of those things. Where do things stand generally right now? I mean, I know that you all oversee so many different things, and you keep so many tabs on these things. Is research going along fairly? How is research doing right now nationally, I guess, is what I want to ask.
Well, one of the important things to keep in mind is that $3.8 billion to Alzheimer's and dementia research has been appropriated by Congress. And our expectation is when Congress appropriates, the National Institutes of Health will spend it. So we have been right up until the end of the fiscal year, we were in communication with NIH about our expectations. Our grassroots advocates made sure that they were letting them know that our expectation is that they would spend down that full amount for Alzheimer's research. And we feel pretty good that that's what happened.
Okay. So it's still, I mean, that just happened. So I guess that still has yet to have the dust completely settle on that. But you all were advocating really hard on this and hoping that all of those dollars do actually get spent because the need is just tremendous.
Absolutely. We wanted to make sure that if Congress appropriates, then we're able to make those research projects happen.
When you see cutbacks happening, or when you see you know, research being frozen in some cases, how much more important does it make it to have separate funding sources? You know, like for the state of Texas, setting aside $3 billion to fight Alzheimer's and dementia, and maybe other states following suit and creating their own you know, endowments, if you will, to help supplement that, so that you're not totally dependent upon a federal government.
It's a great point that having supplemental and sustainable sources of, you know, this important research dollars continue in multiple different ways, whether that is from the state or from philanthropic partners. You know, we even as an organization, as we saw some research projects put on hold or their funding, you know, pushed for a time period, as an organization, we stepped in with our donors to offer bridge funding to some of those researchers in order to make sure their research projects were not lost during that time period where we were seeing that pause in funding. So it is incredibly important to have multiple sources and a sustained push in order to make sure those projects don't get lost, because that's a significant investment to only get halfway through and not finish it out.
And again, you're really hoping here that all of those dollars that were appropriated federally got spent in time for the fiscal year, which just ended. I'm curious, how much does it muddy the waters that we're in a shutdown right now? How much does that affect things?
Well, you know, right now, for all that we can tell is that the dollars continue to be at work in communities. Certainly, the longer the shutdown goes, the more we will get concerned about the continued funding of those research projects. So it's heavy on our mind that we want to make sure that the research dollars, but also the dollars to other programs within communities that provide care and support, are funded as well.
I saw a blurb from you all, and it surprised me, that said that Alzheimer's and dementia is actually more costly in America than cancer or heart disease, which that's tremendous to wrap your head around that.
Absolutely. And I would add another key statistic on top of that, and that's that caregivers of someone with Alzheimer's and dementia experience more stress than any other type of caregiver. So it's not just the cost of the disease on the person who is living with the disease, but it's the cost, the emotional cost, on the family that is caring for them as well.
Yeah. And it's a 24-hour-a-day job.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this. The timing of this, as Texas gets ready to possibly create this tremendous fund to fight Alzheimer's and dementia, how important is the timing right now? I mean, it seems like we're always hearing about possible breakthroughs, but it seems also like we've heard a flurry of that kind of activity just in the last year, year and a half, 2 years. How close are we to some real extraordinary breakthroughs as far as, you know, from where you're sitting?
Yeah, I think the next 18 months to 5 years are going to bring us tremendous innovation within the Alzheimer's and dementia research space. As I mentioned, we have now two approved FDA treatments for the first time in history that treat the underlying biology of the disease. These are first-line treatments. We don't expect them to be cures, But what we do expect is that we're going to learn what works better the next time. And not only that, we're going to get to a place where there's the potential for combination therapies, where we're looking at the disease biology and treating multiple pathways at the same time. At the same time that we're looking at these treatments, diagnostics is an incredibly important part of this as well. Accurate diagnosing and understanding what type of dementia someone could have is important to know what type of treatment that we're researching, but also that could benefit an individual in the community. There's more in the research pipeline right now than we have ever had in the history of research in Alzheimer's and dementia. And I absolutely believe that as those things come out of the pipeline, we're going to see tremendous advances.
Boy, when you say that the pipeline is more full than it has ever been, and that you think we're going to see extraordinary breakthroughs with Alzheimer's and dementia in the next 18 months to 5 years, I don't think that Texas leaders planned this, certainly, but it sounds like the timing could not be better for there to be this other huge bank account from which grants can be issued to push that progress along faster.
Yeah, it creates a tremendous opportunity to improve the infrastructure for Texans to receive care, but also to improve the infrastructure for more research as well.
And part of that research, as we said before, is not just finding a cure or finding, you know, new drugs to help with the care. It's also about preventing people from getting Alzheimer's and dementia, and there have been some inroads made there.
Yeah, absolutely. Here in Texas, the Alzheimer's Association ran a research study called US Pointer for the last several years that looked at lifestyle intervention and can a rigorous lifestyle intervention reduce your risk of developing cognitive impairment and dementia. We released those results this summer at our Alzheimer's Association International Conference, and we were able to show that yes, a rigorous lifestyle intervention does reduce your chance of developing cognitive impairment and improves your brain health by about 1 to 2 years over a self-help guided research project. Now, the challenge to us is translate that to the community. So we've been working with our partners to look at how do we bring that type of community intervention forward to make sure everyone can benefit from that.
Let me put you on the spot with that then. So that research was done here in Texas. And so I'm curious, some top line takeaways from that for people who may not have read that or may not have heard that. What kinds of things should I be doing now?
Yeah, one of the sites for that research study was in Houston, and the intervention was around nutrition, physical activity, social engagement, and also cognitive training, and also medication management. So making sure that you're doing things like managing your high blood pressure. So what in everyday life, what can a Texan do? They can think about their diet, in particular, a Mediterranean-based diet. Be more active.
A lot of fish and beans and those sorts of things. And of course, your greens and all of that, nuts.
Yep. And be active, you know, walk, lift weights, do those things that are going to get you out and your heart moving. And make sure you're managing your other potentially comorbid conditions or your other health conditions, whether that's high blood pressure or diabetes.
And that social part of it is huge, too. And that's a good reminder for all of us, I think, if we know someone in our lives, especially who might be older, who's alone, you got to engage, you got to reach out, and you got to keep those social interactions rich and often.
Yeah, absolutely agree. That social engagement, finding something that you feel passionate about and continuing to find channels to do that.
Dr. Pike, I know you have a million things going on, so just a couple more things for you real quick. If Texas goes forward with this, if voters approve Proposition 14, will this make Texas sort of a center, sort of a capital of Alzheimer's and dementia research and care?
It is a significant investment, and it will absolutely make Texas a leader and a center of excellence within the research and care field.
I was also going to ask you, because we talk about this all the time with these propositions, you live in Austin, so you show up to these elections, and you know the wording on these propositions is notoriously horrible. I don't know who they get to write these things, but you get down into this run-on sentence that feels like it goes for a paragraph, and you think, I'm not sure whether to say yes or no here. So I think it's brilliant what you all have been doing, and that's just basically telling people you want to vote this way on Proposition 14. So if you want to just announce that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes on 14. And if you need some more information about it, please go to alz.org/yes on 14.
And my last question to you is, what do you say to voters out there? You know, we see the paltry turnout every time we get to one of these constitutional amendment elections. These are huge issues that deal with so many things that touch people's everyday lives and discuss how our money is spent in this state. And yet we see a relative handful of people who show up. What would you say to people out there to get them out to the polls this time, especially if they have family history of dementia or Alzheimer's, or they're taking care of someone who's going through this? What would your plea be to Texas voters?
Yeah, I would put it just exactly where what you said. Everyone is impacted by Alzheimer's or another form of dementia. And this is an opportunity for Texans to be a leader, but also to make sure that we change how care is delivered, whether that is through the healthcare system or within communities throughout the state.
Dr. Joanne Pike, President and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association, thanks so much for being with us here today and joining us from Austin. Sorry that we couldn't actually make it down there to you, but we wanted to get this thing done because we know that early voting is starting soon, and we wanted to get your take on all this.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.